Hello, and welcome to the Mail Report on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Chris Marshall of the Clickit Comics Library.
In this episode, we'll be discussing the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month. All right, this is the Mayo Report Trades episode for September 2011. We're going to be talking about the top 300 trade graphic novel hardcover collected edition sales through Diamond to retailers, obviously for September 2011. Want to be clear, this is what's going through Diamond. Some stores are doing other ways to get some of their trades and stuff, which, hey, if that's the right business decision for them, I support that entirely. Diamond is a non-returnable thing, and they can get better deals elsewhere. Sometimes, you know, hey, who can fault them for that? So, we always talk about the breakdown of the top 300, and it's kind of interesting this time around that, Marvel came out on top, and that happens out of the Final Order era, which we're over 100 months into, because that started in, March 2003. Mm-hmm. Let me double-check, make sure I get this right. 70 times DC came out on top on the trade side. About 34 times Marvel's come out on top. So pretty much a 2-to-1 thing.
We didn't have an Image Walking Dead come out number one or anything like that?
No, not this month. Actually, when we get to the top couple, I found the stuff at the top of the list really interesting this time around for a couple of reasons.
Yeah, no, it is very interesting. You're right.
But we'll get to that in a bit.
Okay. I didn't mean to jump ahead of you, sorry.
No, that's fine. I'll jump around. We always do. I can keep up, hopefully.
I usually just let you roll. You know, you get a good 10-minute intro, John, but, you know, this time I'm interrupting.
Hey, by all means, that's what you're here for. Keep me honest. Keep me on my toes. Marvel, though, had the top amount of the total unit sales for the top 300, but it only had 26.2% of those unit sales. So really, just above a quarter. Now, granted, by percent and a fifth, but it's one of those things that you look at how heavy-handed the top publisher tends to be over on the comic side, which usually is Marvel, and how they have frequently around 50%, and how in the past we've had kind of that three-way split. It's now getting to be almost a four-way split on the trade side with Marvel and DC, the other kind of premier publishers or big dogs, and then everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a much more level playing field on the trade side, as it, you know, always kind of has been, than on the comic side. Now, DC is not that far behind Marvel with 21.17% of the total unit sales. Now, you go by dollars, Marvel had 31.88%, DC had 23.12%, but, you know, still, that really goes to who had the highest ticket item this time, and Marvel had that by far.
They had easily.
$150 item. The next highest, I think, was a $69.99 item from Image.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, really, I mean, we've talked about this quite a bit over the last year or two, how the big-ticket items have kind of gotten a lot less frequent.
Right.
You know, when we had first started doing these podcasts on this, you know, there were usually two or three $100 items, two or three, you know, $75 items or whatever. A lot more big ticket items. And, you know, my wallet is happy with the not so many of them. Image did pretty well. It had 12.19% of the total unit sales in September. And then we had Dark Horse and IDW, the other two premier publishers. Dark Horse having just under 7.5% of the total unit sales, and IDW having about 5.9% of the total unit sales. So, I mean, you add that up for the premier publishers, and that comes to a little under 73%. It's actually 72.95% of the total unit sales. So it's still very heavily weighted towards kind of the front half of previews, but these guys are also coming out with just a ton of stuff compared to a lot of the other publishers.
Well, and one of the other publishers that we have not seen, I mean, I do my release list every week, and I look at, you know, Charlie LePage's comics list and also what's coming out from, you know, on the previews website. And, you know, you'll take a company like Dynamite, John, they have been cranking out the monthly books and the variant covers and everything like that for a good couple years now. And when it's come to their trades and collected editions, they solicit a lot, but it seems like they just get pushed back and pushed back or canceled, or, you know, maybe it just not enough orders, and so they have to cancel it. I don't know what the reason is, but Dynamite, as far as their trade side, has really fallen off, and I'm not sure what that attribute, why that is.
That's a good question, and I think that's the kind of thing that obviously not only would account for a less than stellar performance on the trade list, I actually think it impacts how they perform on the comic list.
Yeah.
Because if they were to be able to keep out the Project Superpowers stuff, maybe some of the Green Hornet, you know, backstories and whatnot, they could keep some of the interest up and get people coming into those titles and properties through the trade side that then might migrate over to the monthly side, or at least be more likely to. So I really think having a strong trade list is just in a publisher's best interest.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't really follow it that closely as to how much is offered and how much actually shows up. Because, you know, most months, I don't get that many trades. September was actually kind of an odd month for me because I had two of the top four things on the list this time I actually bought and read already. But it does seem like Dynamite has a definite opportunity for beefing up their trade selection, as does, I think, Boom.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Boom, I think, does okay with it, but that also seems to be another one where it's a little sluggish to get some of the stuff out, maybe. But I definitely think you're right. Dynamite, you look at how they tend to do on the comic side, you look at really how they don't tend to do on the trade side, and, hey, you don't publish the stuff, you can't sell it. It's that simple.
I want to guess the two books that you read. Can I guess the two books?
Yeah.
Teen Titans Games and Castle.
Uh-huh, of course.
I knew it. I know you too well.
Yeah, well, let's go through the top couple on the list. The top one was Holy
Terror.
And then
I do want to touch on the 52 on the monthly side, too. So
oh, certainly,
tell everybody
certainly.
We are going to touch on that.
Yeah, how can we not? I mean, geez.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to go through the top, at least three of the top four, because I found them kind of interesting. Holy Terror hardcover from Legendary Comics. That, of course, is Frank Miller. 9,939 estimated units. That's really, really strong sales for the most part, particularly for, you know, essentially a new property, although one could argue it's just Batman, but not, you know.
Well, and that sucker's not done. We're going to get a lot of reorder activity from now until the end of the year, too.
Oh, yeah. And you look at how Sin City is done and a few of these other things from Frank Miller. This has a good chance of being, I don't want to say a perennial, but certainly a recurring item on the list.
Sure.
You know. Now, we have seen Fables, Walking Dead, and other things come out with a new trade or hardcover, and usually the trade will do somewhere in the 12 to 14,000. So, this is not a chart topper every month, but, I mean, it's just shy of you know, 10,000 units. For the trade side, that's good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we've not had a really strong year, by and large. Number two is, of course, one of the ones I got from DC Comics. It's the Teen Titans Games hardcover. Now, what gets me with this is it was actually a couple of weeks late from, like, the revised expected shipping date.
Right.
And it's like, you know, this thing was 20 years in the making. Why didn't they wait for the whole thing to get in the can before they even solicited this thing?
Mm-hmm.
I really think...
Because they wanted to get the buzz.
I see getting the buzz, but is the buzz you want people being disappointed because it got delayed again?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean... Good question. You know, I mean, you know how, maybe, is it a George Perez thing? I have no idea.
Well, I mean, some of this is, you know, with...
It's beautiful. I thumbed through it at the store, you know.
I
read the
whole thing.
They had an open copy at the store, and I was really impressed.
Read it cover to cover, everything from Marv Wolfman's preface to Perez's afterwards. I did not go through the full script and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It was a little more the reading than I wanted to do, but these guys are at the top of their game. And for something that they had originally plotted out 20 years ago to get that into a what I considered a highly satisfying, very enjoyable, you know, and coherent hardcover, I was blown away by it. I mean, it's George Perez, so on the art, it's going to be top-notch.
Yeah.
I that's a given. I think Marv Wolfman actually had the tougher job here because, again, they started this, what, 1988, I think?
Right, and yeah, did they say how much they worked on it every year, or was there a lapse in a couple of years, or anything like that?
I think like 80 pages or whatever, they'd kind of, you know, plot it out or whatever initially, and then the thing got backburnered, and then it got back into production for a little bit, so they do a little more and so forth. But, you know, for this last go-round, by the time they're looking at it, it's like, now, what were we thinking was going to be the origin of a couple of these characters, or what was their motivation? And you look at how storytelling has changed in comics from when they started this in 88 to now. It is just fundamentally different on so many levels.
Right.
So they had to make some changes, and they talk about that both in the foreword, the afterword, the script, and some stuff like that. You know, hey, we couldn't remember what we were going to do with this, or what we were going to do just wouldn't make sense in today's market, so we changed it to this. And, you know, as a process junkie, I love that kind of stuff. But to again, take something that started back then and make it work for today, I was really pleased by it. I thought that was a great job by them. There was something really funny with this coming out, you know, the third week out of the new DC Universe, telling a essentially a period piece story set roughly in the DC continuity around, well, essentially 1988, a couple of years after Crisis. Yet not in that continuity because of, I mean, they actually do a few things in the story that, now wait a sec, if that had happened, then what about type issues?
Yeah, I was going to ask you that. How much of a continuity thing is it?
It follows from the continuity of then, but branches off, I think is the best way to put
it. It does, okay.
This is not just a, they had an adventure and forgot to tell us.
Okay, good.
Yeah. And I like that.
Between the panels kind of thing, yeah.
Yeah, it was one of those things that this changed. It, had this happened back then, the rest of Titans history in a few places for a couple of characters, yada yada, would have been different.
Right.
Period. Which is good. I mean, it's a story that matters in that case.
And now, one thing about this book that caught me by surprise, because I did not see it until I was at the store, and I didn't even notice this in the solicit, and a lot of times I don't care, but when I saw it in the store, I was surprised to see it in that oversized tabloid size. Did that strike you as odd or out of place, or were you expecting it to be that big as well?
Didn't strike me as odd in the least.
Okay.
That may be more, I just don't get that many trades in hardcovers and stuff.
Okay.
It felt like the right size.
All right.
Now, I really think George Perez, Alex Ross, and a few other artists kind of demand a little bit bigger format.
Right. Just it works. Don't get me wrong. It does work. But I was just surprised to see it, you know, on the rack with the other hardcovers and trades and having it, you know, that, what, 13 by 7 or whatever it was, or, you know, I forget the exact dimensions, but much larger in size.
Yeah. Well, again, it didn't faze me at all. I was just happy to be reading it. You know, I'd been, I'm not going to say waiting impatiently the whole time, but, you know, glad it actually came out. And it's something that I think both those guys, Wolfman and Perez, should be very, very pleased with and happy with the result.
For sure.
So.
And a good story?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, good.
Very satisfied. It reminded me how much I miss that era of the Teen Titans. Now, it did 8,231 units, so not as good as Holy Terror, but frankly, most months this year, this would have topped the list by far. You know what I mean?
No, by far.
So, had this come out at the height of Titans' popularity, it would have done a heck of a lot better, I think. But in today's market, this is solid, respectable sales. Actually, very, very strong ones. You know, I think both the Titans Games hardcover and the Holy Terror hardcover are, you know, anomalies. Yeah, we'll probably get, you know, see Holy Terror on the list again. Don't know so much about the game stuff. But normally what would have topped the list this month would have been the third place item, which is the fourth volume of Chew, the trade paperback. And that's with 6,058 units. Now, the total known sales of the previous volume are about twice that, at 12,278 estimated units. So I think we're definitely going to see Chew back on the list. We usually see those other volumes on the list. This is very much turning out to be kind of another evergreen property for Image these days.
Right.
And that's what any publisher needs.
Well, and now that we have the fourth volume out, I wonder if they're going to do a combined volume like they did for 1 and 2 and have 3 and 4 in another omnibus type edition.
I would expect Chew to follow a very similar repackaging model as Walking Dead.
Yeah.
Because it's going through Skybound, isn't it?
Oh, I think it is. Yeah, now that you mention it, yeah.
So Kirkman, you know, has the opportunity to say, hey, you know, this worked out pretty well for me. Why don't you give it a shot?
Mm-hmm.
And given how Chew keeps staying on the list, makes sense to give it a shot. I mean, it's one of the few properties these days that might be able to start to replicate that Walking Dead success.
Mm-hmm.
And really, every time they reprint Walking Dead, it sells. You know, which, you know, kudos to Kirkman on that. Fourth item on the list, I just found this hilarious on multiple levels. It's Castle, Richard Castle's Deadly Storm, premier hardcover. I mean, talk about a colon and punctuation littered title there. 5,307 units. Now, this was actually written by Brian Michael Bendis, who was adapting the fictional story of Derek Storm, the first adventure, Deadly Storm there, written by fictional author Richard Castle, played by Nathan Fillion on ABC's Castle TV show. I watch the show regularly. I think it's great. I love it. And I really think Bendis did a great job capturing the tone and style of the character. Because
mm-hmm.
it's Derek Storm, but it feels like it was written by Richard Castle.
Mm-hmm.
The dialogue sounds like something he would say or write. 5,307 units. Some months that might have even topped the list this year. You know, this is one where in the bookstores it might do pretty well, depending how it's placed. They've mentioned on the show a couple of times. But it's almost, I don't say more of a novelty item, but gimmicky.
It's gimmicky, yeah.
Again, I think the gimmick worked well.
But I think Bendis said he's going to do more of these.
I would like to.
Yeah.
One of the things I found very entertaining in it was not only was it a good story, how accurate the adaptation was, I don't know because I haven't read the book since it doesn't exist, but it basically follows Derek Storm, who's getting involved in some government-related, you know, spy-type stuff, so he winds up with a, you know, a handler from, I forget if it was the CIA or FBI, or, I think it was the CIA. Anyways, they go through this adventure and leaves it in a state where those two can't really go and have more adventures.
Mm.
Yet at the back of the thing, and I think it took it, my sister says, who's also a Castle fan, from some Richard Castle website somewhere, it had a synopsis of all the other Derek Storm books, the Nicky Heat books, and whatever else Richard Castle had supposedly written. And in those other ones, Derek Storm is teaming up with this same CIA agent in the subsequent ones, and it paragraph blurbs in the back of this thing. And I'm but a few pages earlier when this happened, how can that happen? Kind of,
mm-hmm.
It's like that just confused me. Now most people that wouldn't phase at all. It was a good story. I would like to see them do more.
Mm-hmm.
And I certainly applaud how the TV show has so openly acknowledged and supported the existence of the hardcover.
I watched my first Castle episode, and it was the comic book one,
mm-hmm.
and I really enjoyed it. I thought it was really good with good twists, and yeah, I think I have not watched an episode since, but I might go on Hulu or wherever it's at and catch up on past episodes.
I strongly recommend it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good kind of police procedural show, and granted, there's a bazillion of them on TV both now and in the past.
Right.
This has a couple of good twists with him as a writer. And it's one of those workplace home kind of drama things. Most of it takes place in the police precinct with them doing the who murdered who storyline. But his personal life with his mom and his daughter and stuff,
mm-hmm.
great stuff. I love it. It's a show I definitely recommend, particularly to anybody who is a fan of Nathan Fillion from, you know, Firefly, mm-hmm. Serenity. He was on Buffy for a little bit. He was on Drive and a few other shows. He's just a fun actor to watch,
mm-hmm.
and it's a great character for him. But it was funny that the adaptation of a fictional book by a fictional author placed fourth on the list this time around.
Mm-hmm. That is good, yeah.
And really, it's only two more items down once we get past Volume 2 of Morning Glory's trade paperback at rank 6 that had 5,101 estimated units that we start to really drop pretty fast. The next item, which is the Volume 3 of Brightest Day hardcover, only had 4,259 units. So that's, what, 850 unit drop or so. We drop about another 500 or so units with rank 8, which is Sailor Moon. I'm not even sure I can pronounce that one.
Kodansha?
Yeah, that one. Yeah. We'll go with that. Another trade paperback of that. 3,709. Naruto Volume 52. Really close behind with 3,677 units on that Volume 52. And then we're down below 3,000. You know, so really in the span of 5 units, we lose, you know, almost 2,200 units. So it shows even when we have some strong stuff at the top of the list, really the overwhelming majority of the list, on average, is getting a copy into every store if it were evenly distributed. And I know it's not, but that really, I think, puts it into a perspective there.
Well, Kodansha, it's funny you mention that, because they did the Akira bigger volumes in the past, this past year and the year before. And there was rumor that they were going under, but maybe Random House did pick them up. But for whatever the reason, they are still publishing books. And not only did they do the Sailor Moon Kodansha book, but right below it at rank 16, we have Codename Sailor V, which is kind of like a companion title, I guess. I'm not too big on Sailor Moon, but...
I think that would be Sailor Venus, then.
Or Sailor Venus, is that what it is? Okay.
I know there is a Sailor Venus. I'm not really up on that. It's...
Yeah, but whatever it is, it's two Sailor Moon books this month.
Yeah.
And they were, and within the manga, it was a big deal. I remember reading just the blogs about it and the collected editions and stuff like that, and definitely a big deal in the manga community. So no surprise to see them place well this month, which is good to see.
Well, and I think the Sailor Moon property is making a comeback. Mm-hmm. It was pretty big, I'm going to say 5-6 years ago, but I
can't remember the cartoon series that was...
They did a live-action
anime,
one.
I should say. They did live-action, really?
Yeah, they did live-action over in Japan. It went about a year. It's essentially the young girl equivalent of the Power Rangers, if you will, or the Super Sentai stuff.
Okay, okay.
You know, they've got Sailor Moon, which was the equivalent of the Red Ranger, if you will. They had Sailor Venus, Jupiter, I don't remember what the other ones were, but, gee, they wound up with a team of about 5. They had the transformation stuff, and they fought the bad guys. It was very much I don't say direct parallel, but in the same kind of a vein.
Okay.
You know, and I was reading a website not too long ago, a couple of weeks ago or whatever, that seemed to indicate that the popularity of the property has been, you know, on the upswing. So they may either be doing a new cartoon or trying to tap into the success of that property, you know.
I wouldn't be surprised. Yeah.
Hey, makes sense if it works.
Hey, yeah.
You know.
What else we got?
Let's see. We've got a lot of the same stuff. You know, nothing that really stood out too much, because a lot of these things are doing more or less as I would have expected. One that I found a little higher than I would have imagined was at rank 31. That was the Ruse Victorian Guide to Murder trade paperback.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one where really the cross-gen stuff did not do really all that great on the monthly comics side. You know, we go a little further down at rank 41. We've got the Sigil Out of Time trade paperback. Now, that Ruse one, and again, this was almost a continuation of the old series. Mark Waid wrote this miniseries.
Mm-hmm.
2,124 units. Sigil, which was a reimagining, but something that could kind of fit in with the old version, although, again, new character, new take, 1,833 units. So, given how the Mystic miniseries is essentially tanking right now over on the comic side, the second issue dropped like 60% or something.
Ooh.
I look at these trade sales, and I'm really not thinking, oh, well, it's doing okay on the trade side, so cross-gen will stick around as an imprint over at Marvel. It does not look well, because if you go to rank 221 on the comic side, Mystic went from 18,784 estimated units down, 62.18% to 7,105 units. So, I mean, when you lose almost two-thirds of your sales...
That's quite a drop.
That's harsh.
At that now. Yeah.
And again, the 2100, the 1800, that's not bad. That's actually, you know, both of those hit almost into the top 40. You know, Ruse again at rank 31, Sigil at rank 41. But not enough to kind of compensate for how the monthly stuff seems to be panning out for them.
Right, right.
You know, if we see more cross-gen stuff, miniseries from Marvel, I'd be, frankly, a little surprised at this point, and would kind of question the wisdom on that, depending which property and who they had on it. I do think there's a few others that they could bring back and do pretty well with, but they would have to really pick and choose carefully.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the ones that come to mind are Way of the Rat and Sojourn.
Mm-hmm.
But there's probably a few others, because CrossGen actually had quite a few really good properties.
Didn't Way of the Rat, that got reprinted not too long ago. I want to say probably 3-4 years ago.
Checker picked up quite a few of the unfinished trade series that CrossGen had done.
Yeah.
Which was, I thought, really cool.
Yeah.
Again, I got...
Oh, well, there's been, you know, there's good and bad things about Checker as far as the reprint quality goes, though.
But
especially especially when it comes to the old Flash Gordon and Star Trek stuff.
Oh, true, true. When you get the really old material.
Yeah.
But for stuff that's pretty modern, I wouldn't... I haven't seen the stuff, but I wouldn't think they'd have any major problems with that. And, you know, frankly, the single issues and back issues for the old cross-gen stuff, not that hard to find, not that expensive.
Right.
So, I mean, I don't know that they really need to be collecting all that stuff, but...
No, but they do anyway.
You know, and we talked about this a couple of times. When you've got the stuff already digitally, you know, prepped for having printed the monthly, where's the harm in trying to kick out a collected edition?
Right.
I mean, it may not sell worth beans, as a lot of these things. I mean, I'm looking at really ranks 50 through 100 here, and pretty much everything is at the 1,000 to 1,600 range, 1,700 range. But, you know, if how can that not pay for the printing costs? And the, gee, we had to string a couple of, and I'm going to grossly oversimplify, of course, string a couple of PDFs together, slap a new cover on it, write a solicitation blurb saying it contains issues, you know, 1 through 6. You know, done.
Mm, done.
Minimal effort, minimal risk, minimal return on the investment in time, though. But it gives them something they can put out there, something that, you know, in theory could be listed on, you know, Amazon or whatever forever. But really what we're seeing with a lot of these things, they've collected too much stuff. There's no, oh wow, it's collected, it must be good. And we got the people waiting for the trade and just never coming through.
Right, right.
You know, we talked about how the Shadowland stuff had been doing in past months. At rank 67, we've got the Shadowland Moon Knight trade paperback, 1,386 units. That's most stores, I mean... It got into a lot of stores. Depending how many stores you think are out there, it may not have even gotten into half of them.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's somewhere between 2,000-3,000, maybe 3,500. It's, to a certain degree, it's almost anybody but Diamond's guess, and maybe even their guess, because, you know, they go by how many accounts they have, and I'm not sure I would qualify everybody who's got an account at Diamond necessarily as what you and I would consider a comic book store if you were to walk into it.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, there are those. We have those stores in Detroit. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But what's a little, I don't want to say alarming, but depressing, really, is you look at how these sales are just going down in terms of, I mean, it used to be that we could get to rank 100 and still be well above 1,000 units.
Mm-hmm.
Here we're at rank 100 with Secret Warriors Volume 6, Wheels Within Wheels, Premier Hardcover. 1,041 units. So, I mean, it's really only a couple of ranks below that that we drop below 1,000 units. There's just, there's too much stuff being printed, there's not enough interest in it, and the stuff is moving at slower rates than it used to.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the thing bottoms out this time, I think at the lowest we've ever seen it, at around 296 estimated units.
Yeah, I can't remember too many times we've went under the 300 mark.
Yeah. And it's interesting because, I mean, that's reorder activity. Really, the last, most of the last 50 items, the majority of them are reorder activity. Not too surprising. And it's the kind of thing, if you can consistently move 200 or 300 units or even 100 units a month, mm-hmm. that does add up. But I do think at the end of the year, when we if the book scan data gets leaked again, which it probably will, but if it does,
yeah, we say that every year it gets leaked, and pretty much on time it comes out. So
the thing is, it's going through a circuit that, I mean, book scan says do not release this information.
Yeah.
So somebody is kind of going against that, and I certainly don't want to give that person up. Not that I know who they are, because I don't.
Now, wait, before we get into it, let me ask you this. With borders closing, is that going to have an impact on the book scan numbers? It must.
Oh, certainly.
Yeah.
But both
so how
up
do we,
and down.
So how do we take that book scan number if borders is going to be closed for 4 or 5 months out of the year and do an accurate comparison to the year before? Can we do that?
Well, by definition, it will be an accurate comparison because it will tell us how things sold during the year. The reality is borders shut down.
Yeah.
The other aspect of that reality is as they were shutting down, they were blowing stuff out.
That's
now,
true.
Granted, initially 20% off, 30%, it's like, well, I can do better on Amazon.
But they're not going to have any Christmas restocking or anything like that.
True.
Which is a big part of their business.
However, restocking and book scan... The restocking thing is more of an issue in a non-returnable market like Diamond.
Okay.
Book scan is fundamentally different type of data. The data we're looking at here is like it ranked 299, Unwritten number one, Tommy Tomorrow, Tommy Taylor, sorry, trade paperback reorder, 297 units. That's how many units were invoiced to stores through Diamond in September. Now, out of those 297, we have no idea how many, if any, sold to customers. The actual number of units of that sold to customers could be zero. It could be 1,200. How,
right.
1,200, that's under 300. Well, they probably had some on sitting on their shelf already.
Right.
Okay. But, book scan. If book scan were to report 297, the number they are reporting is point of sales information. That means 297 copies were sold to a consumer.
Okay.
So it is not sell through information, because sell through is a percentage of what the store got versus what it sold. It is not sell in information, and I'd have to double check the definition of this, but this is really what got into stores, you know, versus what sold to stores.
Okay.
So what we're going to find is borders up through, we'll say, the first half of the year, through beginning of July, as if it had always been. It was a regular store at that point. Nobody was on, pretty, well, not nobody, but most people were none the wiser. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. I'm going to say it was around mid to late July, because I was actually having dinner with Bob when I got a call from my sister who'd found from my mom, oh, borders is shutting down.
Mm.
At that point, it goes into a state of flux. They start discounting things. Sales arguably go up because everything they had, they were blowing out.
They're blowing it out, right.
Now, what we're going to have is unit sales, not how much they sold it for.
Mm-hmm.
Some of this went out on a liquidation basis. Then we're going to hit the point after, I think, October, when all the stores, they're gone. They are closed. Mm-hmm. It is no more. So at that point, obviously, nothing can sell through them to be counted in the numbers.
Not even online?
I believe their online business shut down too. I know
it did
that,
shut down.
Yeah.
Oh, I guess
Barnes
and
Noble
that.
Actually bought out the information. I believe.
I didn't know that.
Actually, I could be wrong on that. I know Barnes and Noble bought out information from Borders, but that actually could be from their physical sales. I don't know about their online off the top of my head. I had thought okay. Borders was completely dead.
I just bring that up because I have not gone on Borders.com in years, if ever. So. Yeah. Okay.
If I'm going to go shop online, I'm going to go Amazon myself.
Well, exactly. I wouldn't even go to Barnes & Noble, right? Or
but I forget which one Amazon was the fulfillment partner for, and I believe it was Borders.
Okay.
At which point, when you've kind of already seeded your online sales to a competitor...
You're done.
You know, but it's the kind of thing. If Borders hadn't done that, people would be saying, well, they lost out because they spent too much investing in an online branch.
True.
It's I don't say a no-win situation, but in hindsight, you can cast it however you want.
Mm-hmm.
The bottom line, though, is that's certainly not going to help sales in the mass market. And how the numbers look at the end of next year, which would be a full year without borders, is going to be very, very interesting.
Mm-hmm. True.
Now, you look at these numbers, you look at how a lot of these trades and hardcovers are selling, and frankly, it's no wonder that DC did the relaunch that they did and is trying to kind of beef up interest on the comic side.
Mm-hmm.
You know. Now, speaking of that, how much of the New 52 did you read?
I read them all.
Cool.
I read all the number ones.
How about the number twos? You staying with them, or are you...
I'm kind of waiting for my shipment for my number twos, which I will get the first month of November. But no, I went online and I perused a couple of titles and I borrowed other titles from friends, but I got around to reading them all. I think I have not read Blackhawks or All Star Western yet, and I know I've meant to read those. But from what I've read, I really, really enjoyed them. For the most part, I enjoyed them.
I can definitely understand that. Mm-hmm. It's going to be interesting to see how those things get how they measure up when they get onto this trade list in 6 months, a year, whenever. Now, some of the opening arcs are 4 issues, some are 5, some are 6. So I don't know when we're even going to start to see solicitations for the trades, much less when we'll see them on the list.
Well, in talking to Mr. DiDio, he told me that we are going to start seeing them in May in stores. So solicitations should come around
February,
or maybe get a couple of advanced ones and for the January, you know.
Okay, but we're still a good couple of months off then.
We're a few months off. There was a rumor floating around, and they reported it on 11 O'Clock Comics podcast. Jason Wood was talking about that he heard that, you know, the big giant number one omnibus, which is coming out, right, John, in December?
Yeah.
Well, he heard a rumor that there was going to be a number two omnibus and a number three omnibus, or absolute, I should say. And that is not the case.
I was going to say, that seems like a dicey proposition. I wouldn't think it would be a smart move. Frankly, I think the number one is only going to do what it does, and I think it may only do okay at best.
It'll sell about 700 copies.
I'm going to say it may do a little above. It's going to do more than that.
You think?
Okay. Yeah, it's certainly not going to top the list, though, I don't think.
At $125?
There are going to be some people who are going to say, well, you know, I was able to get into the ground floor. I could see 1,000 units.
Okay.
But I could also see 500.
Yeah.
You know, it's really hard to say with that. And having read all the number ones, I don't think it's going to be a very satisfying read. To me, it's a curiosity. It's a coffee table book.
It's vanity. It's what. Yeah, exactly.
It's to be able to say, here's all the 52 new number ones of the relaunch.
Exactly.
And there's going to come a point, probably by this time next year, if not sooner, where the attitude's going to be, yeah, so what, who cares? Because as big of a deal as this is, and don't get me wrong, it is a huge deal, this relaunch. So was 1 year later to a lesser degree. And in about a year or so's time, it was just kind of, okay, whatever, we're back to where we were, almost. And it's DC really, you know, with all the hype, all the stuff they were saying around the relaunch, you know, I think if you look particularly at what's going to be in that one hardcover with all the new number ones, did they rethink their storytelling? Did they change up all that stuff? You know, as wowed as they said they were by this, that, and the other, was everybody else?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and by and large, I think the overwhelming reaction is, yeah, it's good. I don't think the overwhelming reaction is, oh my God, it's great, and it's just going to kill when it hits the trade side.
Right, right.
Now, granted, on the comic side, it did really well this month. This was the second best month in the final order era for DC by a pretty good margin. Oddly enough, it was not the best month for DC in the final order era.
All right, do me a favor, because DC did their solicits this week, and I don't know if you saw them.
No, I have not.
Okay, but mark these off as I read these titles, because DC, as part of their DC Comics Presents line, you know, their $7.99 book that they put out, January 4th, we are going to get a DC Comics Presents The New 52 Number 1, and it says, don't miss this special sampler issue reprinting 4 of the hottest DC comics. Okay, here we go. Animal Man number 1.
Okay, hang on. Really, that's one of the ones they said was the hottest.
Well, yeah, okay. Yeah, it gets better. Justice League Dark.
I'm looking for that on the... Okay.
Okay. I, Vampire.
Okay.
And Swamp Thing. And one of my questions for you is, where do these four titles rank on the September list? And because I was interested why they chose these titles first and not like, oh, Justice League
I can
or
tell
Flash.
You why they sold, why they picked those.
Okay, have at it.
They're Vertigo-ish titles.
Yes. That, I saw, that, I saw that right away, too. Yes.
That those people tend to gravitate more towards that format.
That's exactly what I was thinking when I saw it.
Now, the first one of those that showed up was Justice League Dark. It was at about the 17th item on the list for DC. This time around, it ranked 20.
Uh-huh.
62,856 units. Not too bad. Going down another couple of ranks to what would place rank 21 for DC, but 29 overall. Swamp Thing, number one, 54,757 units. Jumping down to Animal Man, which was the 35th title for DC at rank 57, It did 41,446 units. All the way down to I, Vampire, which was 49 out of the 51 for DC, because remember, Justice League number one was in August.
Mm-hmm.
At rank 78, I, Vampire did 35,715 units.
Mm-hmm.
Now, granted, the lowest one for the new 52 of OMAC, 33,581 units. Really, a lot of DC titles a couple of months ago would have been very happy with those sales.
You know, it's funny, coming with OMAC coming in at last, I really like that title. In
really?
Fact, most of the titles at the very bottom here, I really enjoyed Demon Knights and Frankenstein.
Demon Knights is I think, going to be one of the sleeper hits.
It's going to be good. I also liked Grifter. I thought that was interesting, depending on how they take it. Vampire was beautiful to read. I thought that was a really cool story.
Wow.
Very, very violent, but I think it's got potential. But again, it's coming across like that Vertigo.
You know, if I'd known how you were coming down on this, I'd have had you do rebuttal episodes for the ones Bob and I did.
I should have. I know. And I didn't care for Static Shock, but I know you like the character.
I like the character. I will admit I'm biased on that one.
Yeah. OMAC was good. I thought DiDio did a pretty good job on that, and the art was spectacular.
The art style doesn't work for me.
I know, yeah. But Men of War, I was sadly disappointed at.
That one actually worked surprisingly well for me. The second issue, not so much.
I should read the second issue. Maybe I'll like the second issue.
But my plan going forward for DC on the comics side, and we should consider how to do the equivalent on the trade side, and I'm definitely open to suggestions.
Uh-huh.
I'm planning on using about $3.2 million as my valuation, if you will, of the DC Universe line.
Okay,
that's the benchmark I'm going to use. Actually, I'm probably going to use $3,199,100.
Yeah.
I may round up. I haven't decided to what level, but about $3.2 million. The reason for that is if you total up all of the items for DC on the list this time around for the new 52, and not include the Justice League reorder activity, you wind up with that number, essentially.
Okay.
So I didn't want to include the reorder stuff. It's essentially this is how much DC was able to move in 1 month of the DC Universe. You know, and again, you wind up with the 3,199,096 units. Now, that's handicapping it or giving it the advantage of not having Justice League, which was, I think, their third best-selling title overall, or certainly up near the top. So that gives them one smash hit to their advantage, plus all of these miniseries they're kicking out to compensate for whatever losses they have.
Like Penguin and that kind of thing.
Penguin, Shade, yeah. Huntress, Secret Origin for Legion.
Would you consider the Dead Man one a miniseries? That is a miniseries.
That's the DC Universe Presents?
Yeah.
That's an opening story arc and an ongoing title. I'm considering that part of the new 52.
Okay.
So I'm using the first issue sales of the new 52 minus Justice League number one.
Okay.
As my benchmark, but I am including non-New 52 DC Universe titles.
Okay.
My Greatest Adventure, or whatever it was that just started up, would be included. You know, things like that. Anything set in that universe. And it's, to me, going to be very interesting. Can they maintain that level or not?
Mm-hmm.
And figuring out, and we've got, obviously, quite a few months to do this, the equivalent kind of a benchmark to use on the trade side, frankly, is a lot harder. Because not everything comes out every month, and I really wouldn't know where to split the hairs on some of this stuff as to what to include as the monthly valuation of the sales on the trade side for the mm-hmm. DC Universe. I mean, would you include the Teen Titans games hardcover or not? You know, how far back do you say, well, that's really too far back to be kind of the current DC Universe? But it's going to be very interesting, I think, to see if this gamble pays off for them on the comic side, and then when it comes over to the trade, if it pays off over there.
Well, I kind of look at the games hardcover the same way I view what we had in August with the retro DC with Green Lantern and, you know, the 70s, 80s, and 90s retro titles. I mean, that's how I consider games, in that same little retro thing.
I would kind of agree with that.
Different
but
format,
also,
but, you know, same kind of thing.
But it's kind of DC Universe, but kind of not the current DC Universe.
Right, exactly.
So,
and it's not an Elseworlds title. It's just another story.
Yeah. I guess what I'm saying is right now, if they were coming out with those, I don't know that I would include those as part of the DC stuff or not.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah.
But, I mean, to me, it really is less a matter of how the things are selling so much as can they maintain the sales.
Mm-hmm.
And if they can maintain them better than they had been doing before, it's a win, you know? But it's the returnability throws a monkey wrench into the works in terms of predicting how it's going to do and stuff. It's
Is it too early to tell what's going to fail?
I am really looking forward to next month's numbers.
Yeah.
Because all the 52 of the number ones landed in the top 100. I'm looking mm-hmm. at the shipping lists every week, and I'm seeing second print, third print of all these. Basically, everything DC's got listed for a number two, the number one's got some new printing coming out.
Mm-hmm.
So if those make the list in October, and they very well could, you could bump out a lot of the you know independent titles and stuff. You could wind up with 104 items for the new 52, plus the miniseries and stuff. October could actually be the best month on the comic side for DC in the Final mm-hmm. Order era.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, you know, it'll be interesting to see. I think it'll be interesting to see where the threes and fours are, because everybody off the bat, me myself included, I bought Batman, I bought Action, I bought Green Lantern, I bought Flash, I bought Detective, right? But what I didn't buy was Suicide Squad or Firestorm or, you know, Batwing, you know. But during a reorder, I might be inclined to listen to podcasts, listen to my friends, talk at the comic book store with the owners and the people that are there and say, hey, why don't you give OMAC a shot, or why don't you give Frankenstein a shot? So I will, in turn, do the reorder activity on those titles I didn't pick up in September.
That's something where DC, I think, should have actually been a lot stronger in their outreach program these days.
You think so? Okay.
Because right now, really, what's going to turn the tide... turn the tide's the wrong phrase. That implies it's going down.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that would definitely shift things and get the wind blowing in the right direction for them, almost guaranteed, is to be proactively trying to steer the word-of-mouth campaign. Because,
mm-hmm.
really, I think you're right that everybody's going to sample the first issue of most things they're interested in.
Mm-hmm.
From that, they'll stick with the second issue of the ones they like, and from there...
Exactly. Yeah, I'm still going to get Green Lantern, I'm still getting Flash, right.
But, what's
but in my reorder, I'm also going to put more money into DC. So I get my 10 titles in September. In October, I'm going to be getting 20 titles. 10 of them are reorders.
But people who hadn't been getting, say, Demon Knights and are hearing good things about it are likely to go, oh, I'll go check that out.
Exactly. Right. That's kind of what I'm getting at. Right?
Exactly. That word of mouth is going to get those sales. So that's where we're going to see some interesting upswings. Now, the other thing is all but eight of the number ones, and Bob and I will talk about this in a lot more detail. We already talked about some of it on the fourth publisher spotlight for DC. Were reported at returnable numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Because the deal is, if you had ordered, I think it was 125% of your orders for May, you could return stuff. You had to pay 20 cents, return the cover. I forget the logistics or whatever, but you could basically overorder and not lose your shirt. Because, again, they were pushing very hard to get as much stuff out there, saturate the market. Smart move. But with everything, for the most part, but the eight titles that had the alternate covers and whatnot, but the rest of the 52 being reported at reduced numbers because of the returnability, and seeing all these other printings and you know, reorder, or, you know, implication of strong reorder activity, my stand is those reduced numbers are going to stand and go up. You know, there's obviously reorder activity. There's a lot of interest in this. So it comes down to, at what point does that start to calm down versus retailers having adjusted and kind of figuring out the right level for them? Where does that level out? And do we see a quicker equilibrium point on these titles? And, you know, where is that for these titles?
Mm-hmm.
But certainly, I really think October on the comic side is going to be a very, very interesting month to watch.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree that by the time we get the third, fourth, and stuff, once we get out of that honeymoon period that everybody's in with the new DC Universe, we'll start to get a better indication of where things are going.
Right.
And those will be the issues that start to reflect, oh, wow, people really clicked with this title, but not so much with that.
Well, or, like we were talking a few minutes ago about the DC Presents, which are the Vertigo title, pseudo-Vertigo titles, they might wait for the trade on those.
Yeah.
You know?
Very much. It's going to be interesting to see which titles do what kind of a drop on the second issue, third issues, and stuff, and compare that down the line when we get those as trades to see if there's any kind of correlation.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is one of the few times where we kind of have everything at a even starting point, not to say sales-wise, but at least time-wise.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas it's kind of hard to do that currently with the trades we have on the list this month, because of the staggered time everything came out and whatnot.
Well, and we're also not bringing up the fact that creative teams change, too. They're already starting to change. And that has an impact on a title, without a doubt.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. They've replaced one or two writers, a couple of different art teams on some books.
Right. Even going into the number twos, they did.
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah, well, that'll be interesting to see, so... I think Perez is off Superman already. So
I heard that. I was so disappointed to hear
that.
Yeah. That was my favorite book.
Get the title going, and now he's off, you know?
I really think that's the book everyone editorially and creatively at DC needs to really sit down, read, analyze, and look at the accessibility, how he sets stuff up, how much story he put on every page.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Perez...
For Superman or action?
Superman.
People said it was wordy, and it was wordy. But I enjoyed it still.
I'm not going to argue whether it was wordy. I'm not going to argue whether it was crowded on the page because there's so many new panels.
Right.
But you look at some of those pages. Yeah, could they have cut out some words where they kept saying people's names to associate the names and the faces? Certainly. Should they have? I don't think so.
Yeah.
You know, do I want every book to be necessarily that wordy? No. Do I want it to be that dense with story? Yes.
Yeah.
And there were pages that had 13, 14, 15 panels on it, yet flowed really well. You have Perez do breakdowns on a story he wrote, you're going to have that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the other book along those lines, where having the writer also be the artist, that really stood out for me was Flash.
Mm-hmm.
That was one where Francis Monopole really, I think, had his A-game out there. The colorist and the rest of the art team was on board with what was going on, and just some beautiful stuff there.
Mm-hmm.
Eisner art nominee. Mm-hmm. Quality, I think.
Probably.
So, you know, it's interesting to, again, look at kind of the lackluster stuff on the trade side compared to how really, you know, upbeat it was on the comic side, particularly for DC. And, you know, this could be very much a turning point for the industry. Now, there's a lot of talk about, oh, digital's doing great or whatever. you know, that we've hit some magic turning point there, because now over half the comics coming out this week are available digitally and stuff. Hey, that's great. I've got nothing against that. But until numbers start coming out versus it sold the best ever,
mm-hmm.
what does that mean? You know, I'm going to remain a little skeptical on this.
Right.
But hey, if it's getting comics out into new readers' hands and stuff, that's great. I'm all for that. Now, company I work at, there is a lot of people who have tablets. There are a lot of people who are high-tech savvy who could be consuming these comics digitally. I mean, we have comic book posters throughout the office.
Mm-hmm.
So there's not a, oh, I, what do you mean comics still exist? Not at all. People know.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really not hearing or seeing anybody that was not already into comics really talking about them. And really, I'm not hearing anyone talk about the New 52.
Mm-hmm.
So I do question the penetration into the digital market that's happening, and hope that my office is just a little bit of an anomaly and it's more successful than appears to me.
Well, and it was nice to see the new Kindle Fire and the ad at Amazon that had the Watchmen right there on the Kindle Fire. But I'm like, you know, that book's 25, going on 30 years old. You know, it's maybe they should have put Justice League number one on there or something like that, you know?
No, I think Watchmen was a good call.
You think so?
I would have put Watchmen. I would have put Fables. I would have put Camelot 3000. I would have put Sandman.
Yeah.
I would have put... Okay, I'm drawing blanks after that. I'll admit
that.
But,
I mean, it's eye-catching. You know what I mean? It is. But, you know, and that is a... Even though it's a 12-part series, it's a cohesive graphic novel, quote-unquote. But, yeah, I would have, you know, something a little more new, I think.
New is good, yeah. But great is better.
That's, yeah, you got to put the classics on there. I understand. Yeah.
You put, not, putting Shakespeare not so much on just there. The classics and stuff, but the things that made people say, wow, this is amazing stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
If you
well, and
start
the cover
out,
stands out on that for sure. With
oh,
the
yeah,
big clock
totally.
And
it's iconic.
Yeah. It is iconic, right. You're right.
You know, and it's time-tested.
Right.
So... Now, that brings up the other issue, though, that's been going around on some of the websites with DC and some of these trades and whatnot on how certain stores are boycotting DC.
Yeah, I read that.
Because they can't get certain, I guess, exclusives. Can you clarify the issue for me just a little bit? I mean, what exactly...
You know, I really haven't read a whole lot about that, but yeah, that's pretty much the story.
Because, right, yeah, my understanding is since DC's got certain exclusives, I guess, for Amazon or whatever that other stores can't get, they're saying, well, if we can't have every version of it, we're not going to sell it at all.
Exactly, right.
The irony of that is, isn't that the exact complaint comic book stores have had towards these same publishers for years? How come you're giving this special exclusive edition to... The big box Borders or Barnes & Noble across the street from me, and I don't have an opportunity to sell it to my readers or my customers or whatever.
Yeah.
There's a certain irony there. And, I mean, I certainly can't fault any publisher, you know, from doing exclusive deals with certain vendors. I can't fault competitors of that vendor saying, well, if you're not going to be nice to me, I'm not going to sell your stuff.
Okay, well, here's the here's a press release off of ICV2. Regarding Books A Million. Books A Million, which operates 211 stores in 23 states, has decided to pull the top 100 selling DC graphic novels off its shelves to protest DC's deal with Amazon that gives Amazon's new Kindle Fire a 4-month exclusive on a number of digital versions of DC graphic novels, including the perennial bestseller, Ta-Ding Watchmen. Books A Million's actions parallels the move made by the nation's largest bookselling chain, Barnes & Noble, which decided to pull the DC graphic novels from the shelves of its 705 stores a week and a half ago. In a press release issued by Books A Million, CEO stated that he could not support a publisher that, quote, limits distribution of their content. We will not promote titles in our stores, showrooms, if publishers choose to pursue these exclusive agreements that create an uneven playing field in the marketplace. So
the irony is hilarious there.
Yeah.
The store that had been benefiting from exclusives that the comic shops couldn't get is now understandably, a little upset that they're on the wrong end of the equation now.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is all happening right now in October. Probably too soon for it to affect the October numbers, but this is, again, another ripple in the pond that could really, you know, influence how the direct market sales to the comic stores go. Because there could be some stores that are realizing, hey, if that big box store not too far from me isn't going to have this, maybe I should, or maybe they can sell more.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe they can't, because maybe that clientele just simply isn't ever going to set foot into a comic store.
Mm-hmm.
But I found that
I think we should all go to Barnes & Noble tomorrow and ask if they've got a copy of Watchmen.
Yeah.
I think we should.
That would
start
funny.
That movement.
That would be funny.
Mm-hmm.
Then they'll reverse the opinion, get them copies in, and of course we don't need it. We all have it.
Yeah, exactly. I got like 4 copies of it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, that's just kind of, you wonder if they're going to settle this by Christmas season, you know?
Yeah.
But maybe DC doesn't even give a crap. I don't even know, you know.
It really comes down to how much sales loss is that for them. We've seen at the end of the year that in many cases, for some titles, the mass market totally dwarfs and just outweighs the direct market. In other cases, it's the exact opposite.
You know, depends on the title. It depends on the Fables and other things like that, yeah.
Yeah. So, will be interesting to see how that plays out.
Mm-hmm.
As we talked about, price-wise, really lower prices are in vogue. There was not any price point that really had the overwhelming percentage of items on the list this time around.
Are we talking trades again?
Trades again, sorry. we tend to do that, Chris.
We do. Yes, we do.
56 items were at the $19.99 point. 52 were at the $14.99 point. That right there accounts for 36% of the list.
That's a sexy price point, isn't it? We've seen that more and more. In fact, you know, we've done away with the $17.99 price point, and it's either at 19 or 14 or 24.
Actually, there are 22 at the $17.99.
Are there really? Okay.
Yeah. But what we've really gone away from is more the higher price stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
the $29.99 stuff. I mean, Holy Terror is $29.99, but
well, we had 17 items at that.
Mm-hmm.
But at the $30 or over, there's only two dozen items.
Mm-hmm.
And two of those were $150. One was $125. The next highest was $70, and then two it's $74.99. But really, the high-ticket items, not that common. Now,
oh, the Walt Simonson. Oh, the reorder on that. Okay.
Yeah, I was going to just start to filter the list to those.
And then the X-Men. That's a reorder. Astonishing X-Men. And then the only new one was the $74.99, the Evolutionary War Omnibus.
The yep. Dark Tower Omnibus Slipcase at for $150 at rank 146.
Yes.
And the Art of Marvel Studios slipcase at 288, rank 288 with 306 units. So, but really all of those couple of items at the 75-ish or above,
mm-hmm.
you know, total sales for that total up to, let's see, 2,842 units. So, you know, there's just... by and large, I think it's smart for publishers not to be going for the big expensive edition, which really puts that 52 hardcover into an interesting position. Is it going to be more expensive than people want to pay for? Or is it going to have that novelty aspect that enough people say, oh, I'll give it a shot?
Well, I am definitely in that camp because, let's see, $54.99 Marvel Masterworks Iron Man Volume 7, I bought that. $59.99 Sugar and Spike Archives, Golden Age Marvel Comics Volume 6. I bought that. Let's see. I'm having fun with this now. Okay. $74.99 Evolutionary War Omnibus. I bought that. That is right up my alley, man.
Yeah. Well, I will say one thing I personally am noticing as I'm filling out my GCBS order every month is it seems to be drifting down.
Yeah.
For the October 2011 previews. It was low enough that I was able to squeeze in that art edition from IDW on the Spider-Man stuff.
Very nice. Very nice.
And still come in below I was usually coming in.
Well, I can tell you, stay single and don't have a child that likes comics, because Patrick is driving up my my order number every month.
That's a good thing, though.
It is. It's fun. Yeah.
Yeah.
I got to watch what he reads, though. You know, we're not getting everything. But...
Oh, yeah. Definitely watch what he reads.
He likes the Green Lantern titles, but not Red Lanterns. He's getting the three of those.
I have not been impressed by Red Lanterns, personally.
No, I thought it was a weak story. Number one was a weak story, but I think... The other three titles have potential, though.
Yeah. I really think what is going to be interesting to see shake out is what the verdict comes down on. I know DC's been saying this is a relaunch.
Mm-hmm.
And with the case of Batman and Green Lantern, it's pretty much following on the heels of what had happened before. But the fact that the backstory and the continuity has been completely, you know, reworked.
Yeah.
De facto, it is a reboot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just with heavy carryover. And there's going to come a point where there's going to be some friction between the, it's all new, we didn't need the past, and enough
and of the
past. Crisis
didn't happen.
Well, actually, Crisis did happen.
Well, DiDio said it didn't.
Hawk or Dove, somewhere in the Hawk and Dove first issue, they mentioned it did.
Really?
The biggest crisis the world had ever seen. It wasn't called Crisis on Infinite Earths by name, but it was clearly referenced as stuff.
Okay, I'll go back
when
and look at
the original Dove died.
Okay.
We know Superman died and came back. That was in Swamp Thing number one.
Okay.
We know Barbara Gordon was shot by
That's
the
true.
Joker.
That's true. We do know that. Yep.
So we've gotten various key aspects of the high-level continuity. Because what they've basically gone on record saying is, you know, they're sticking with the highlights.
Right.
And kind of glossing over everything else. But when you condense everything down into it had to happen in 5 years, it kind of really muddies the waters.
Well, and the same thing with Batman having four Robins. Was he get a new Robin every year? I mean, you know.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
You know, Barbara Gordon was shot 3 years ago, according to, I think, the second issue of Batgirl.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's enough that we can start to put some timeline stuff together. Now, there are a lot of people saying, oh, who cares about continuity, and that's fine for them. But for me, every time they do something like this, it kind of creates a friction with the old timeline, and it confuses me.
Right.
On the one hand, Justice League International, in theory, launched out of the Justice League Generation Lost series that just finished up.
Right.
However, they've rebooted Blue Beetle. Power Girl is not Power Girl on this world.
Right.
There were Captain Atom's been rebooted. You know, it's gotten to the point where about half those characters couldn't have been in that story as they were.
Mm-hmm.
You know, particularly the whole Blue Beetle thing, that was kind of key to it.
Mm-hmm.
Unless they're going to... Because they've been playing fast and loose on when some of these stories happen. It was a little while ago that Blue Beetle's origin is taking place, but was that long enough ago for him to have done everything he would have needed to have done to have been in that Justice League Generations Lost? What's Booster's backstory? You know, they've thrown
there are some gaps.
A continuity confusion that for new readers doesn't matter at all. For me, it's not a big deal, but it's something that they really should have found a way to finagle around and prevent happening at all.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, if you're going to do a clean thing, do a clean thing. You know, restart. Don't try to have your cake and eat it too.
Well, and what kind of confused me is when, you know, 5 years ago in Justice League, Hal has no idea that Batman exists, basically. He's, you know, he's still that myth.
Mm-hmm.
But yet, I think it was Detective, you know, all three Robins are there. And we know that Batman was with Talia while he was Batman conceiving Damian, you know, and he's, what, 10 years old, 11 years old or something like that.
He's at least eight.
At least.
And you're right. They mentioned that in, I think, the second issue of Batman and Robin.
Yeah. And also...
That right there is the continuity confusion I'm talking about.
And then Jason, he's the Red Hood. So 5 years ago, you're right at where, I'm guessing right where Jason dies and Tim comes in. And then Damian's only been Robin for 6 or 8 months in current, you know, present day, maybe.
But Batman had still been away for a while.
He's been away for a while. Right. So, they're going to have to flesh that out. Maybe they don't have to. But, you know, for a guy like me who's a Nightwing guy, it's like, all right, was he in Titans? Was there an Outsiders? Or, you know, because in the Red Hood, Jason mentions that he and Starfire and Dick had hooked up.
Yep.
So, you know.
And it's interesting because in that same issue, and I know this is continuity stuff that half the listeners may or may not care about, but
no, probably not.
Hardcore comic fan here, this to me matters. In that issue of first issue of Red Hood and the Outlaws, Speedy, Arsenal, Red Hood, or Red Arrow, whatever he's going by, which is a little unclear, is quizzing Starfire on first names. Well, what about Donna? What about this guy? What about this guy? Which is essentially Garth and stuff, all the original Titans the Wolfman Perez from the Teen Titans games, you know, rough era. And she's like, nope, don't remember one of them.
Yeah.
And the thing is, if we as readers are getting confused by this, I have to think that at DC, the creators and the editors are completely perplexed. Because, I mean, I've read from Crisis, which we'll say is a starting point of that continuity, plus quite a few, like 4, 5, 6 years before that, through Flashpoint, the end of that continuity. Not necessarily all of it, 95% at least. And there are things like this that are getting confusing, and it's the same kind of continuity confusion that we saw after Crisis that sort of unraveled that.
Yeah.
And that's when you started having toxic level of continuity around Hawkman, around some of these other characters that forced them out of play for a while. And can they finagle that? Can they move that forward? Can they clean that up? Can they make that manageable right now? Because by the time we see these stories in the number ones and twos on this trade list come May, you know, April, June, July, whatever, enough stories will have been told, or enough issues will have come out, that continuity confusion is either going to be completely rampant, or they will have started to get their arms around it and manage it. And that, to me, is a long-term success or failure factor.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, you know, yeah, we have the five-year flashback in Justice League and a few other flashbacks here and there, but for the most part, all these number ones don't start, like, on a Tuesday, on the same Tuesday. You know what I mean? They can't. There's no way.
We only have one scene that starts to tie together the timelines between the different books, any of the different books, and that's in Supergirl, where she's actually hearing a few lines of dialogue from Nightwing, Aquaman, and I think it was Birds of Prey. That's the only thing that starts to anchor any of these things in time relative to each other, firmly. But, you know, hey, it's I really want to see how that hardcover is going to read for somebody when they get the first chunk of 52 different stories. But I'm really hoping that that's re-energized the fan base, that we're going to see some reflection of that on this side of the list over the coming months. Certainly we've already seen it on the comics side. Great month for DC over there. Bob and I will go into a lot more detail on that. But if any listener has a thought as to how to easily go through the and come up with a benchmark to be using on the trade side for valuing the DC universe, I'm certainly open to suggestions. And when I say that, I want people to actually give a little bit of time, look through the list, and actually think through. It's not just a, well, take everything that's in the DC universe, add it up, average it. Okay, tell me everything that's in the DC universe. Bob and I went through that exercise a couple of months ago, and it was a pain in the butt to
do
that. Oh, I bet.
Yeah.
And that was on the comic side, I believe. But, you know, we'll see how this stuff goes. It's fun stuff.
Yeah, at the end of the day, it's good story. It's, you know, pretty good art for the most part. And, you know, you just want to get entertained, you know, when you come home from work. And for the most part, I am. I'm really pretty satisfied. You know, and yeah, it's a gimmick. You know, they didn't need to do number ones. They could have just had new storylines, you know, and but, you know, it's kind of cool.
I think they had to do the new number ones, and I'm going to say it was more than a gimmick. And the reason for that is the coinciding with the day and date digital.
Well, that's,
me, that justified the number ones.
Well, gimmick as I mean, you know, 52. You know, all these new titles coming out and relaunching everything and, you know, I mean, that sort of thing. I mean, there's something wrong relaunching Detective or Batman or Superman or Action or Justice League. I mean, they've done, you know, they've relaunched Flash and Green Lantern a number of times over the years, you know, so that's no big deal. But, you know, gimmicky as in launching the same month and, you know, that kind of thing. There is a marketing gimmick to it. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, totally, totally. Yeah, that's all. But I think that was a necessity.
I can see that.
If they hadn't focused the attention on this the way they had, we would not be seeing the results we're seeing.
Mm-hmm.
And really, you know, they had, six titles over 100,000 this time around, plus, you know, one from last month. Those are some of the best-selling things of the year.
Yeah. But like we said, you know, we'll see how they sustain it.
Exactly. And that's what it comes down to.
That's what it comes down to.
Not where does it start, but where does it go from there?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's to me why Walking Dead is a success. Not because of where it is selling, but where it is selling relative to how it had originally sold.
Right.
But definitely a very interesting month to be looking at the sales and stuff. And certainly the next couple are going to be interesting. And it's going to be fun to see what DC chooses to collect and not collect over the next couple of months until they get to where they do the first of the new 52 collections.
Mm-hmm.
So, anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
No, I think I'm good, man. I'm going to go have some NyQuil and go to bed.
Yeah. No, I appreciate you doing this. I know your throat's a little sore. What do you got coming up on your show?
You know, I haven't really done much of anything with my show. I've been so bogged down at work that you know, I'm keeping, you know, my release schedule updated and my library updated for the most part on the blog, but I haven't really been blogging, and I meant to podcast today and I didn't get around to it, and, you know, just one thing after another. But you know, I haven't even been doing my Sunday reviews. I've been pretty lax over my site, but I am still alive. I am still on my Facebook page. So yeah, if anybody wants to contact me regarding collected editions and questions or email or just kind of chat, I am still around. Site is not dead, so cool. It'll pick back up. I'm just
good to hear. Hey, life gets in the way sometimes.
It's a good thing that I'm busy at work, because I've been laid off for so damn long. So now that I'm busy, I'm happy.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's one of those things.
I know how that goes. I was that way about 2.5 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Cool. Well, I think that does it then.
What about you?
Oh, for us, I'm just glad we're done with the going through the 52 number ones. That was rough. It was fun, don't get me wrong, but man, time consuming. We've got a couple of new, obviously the weekly comic spotlight. We're still doing the Marvel, DC, and other. Big challenge there is finding DCs that we haven't just talked about. So we're going through a lot of the miniseries, funny enough.
Mm-hmm.
You know, on the next one we're going to record, which I think will go up right before this airs, will be the whole time thing again. Shade, which is the Opal City one, not Shade the Changing Man, which goes again towards that whole confusion thing at DC.
Right.
X-Men Regenesis number 1, and Who is Jake Ellis number 5.
Mm.
And that was one that had some delays coming out. Beyond that, we still got to pick what we're going to do on some stuff. We'd been doing pretty much 3 episodes a week for a while now, and a couple of really long ones with the publisher spotlights on DC. You know, when that started up, I was right doing the initial crunching for last month's numbers. Now that it ended, I'm doing had done the crunching for this month's numbers. So I'm looking for a little bit of a lull in our release. Still the 1 a week guaranteed, maybe a little bit more than that. But I don't think we're going to be firing on as many cylinders as full speed ahead as we have been for the last month.
Take it easy, man. You need a nap.
Oh, yeah. We reviewed, again, about 60 comics in a month. And
unbelievable. That's just a lot of reading, too, you know?
Yeah.
Man.
It takes me easily 5-10 minutes to read a comic when I'm just reading it. When I'm actually doing it for a review, that goes up towards about 20 minutes easily, because I'm taking some notes.
Sure. Absolutely.
Oh, gee, what about this? What about this? I thought of that. You know, whatever. So I can come and sound halfway coherent.
Mm-hmm.
Scary, isn't it? Think how bad I would do if I hadn't taken notes.
Exactly.
So, but it was, I'm glad we did it. I'm, you know, happy to say we, you know, can point to reviews for all 52 of them and stuff.
I enjoyed your shows. I thought they were done well, well done. I liked it.
Cool. I appreciate that. I would like to see more feedback on the show, just in general. I mean, if people have questions on the numbers or disagree with the review or whatever, I'm always looking for this to be more of a discussion about comics than just me and Bob and you talking about comics.
Right, right.
At some point, I'm kicking around the idea of maybe Bob and I doing a roundtable discussion with a couple of people on just what makes a good number one.
Yeah, there
so
you go.
I'm toying with that idea, but it comes down to I want to get some thoughts organized. I need to have a little time to pick up the pieces on a few other things I had to let slide while we were doing all the reviews.
Derek would be a great one to have on that show.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he did the number one podcast for a long time, mm-hmm. which was I thought was an awesome concept for a show. You know.
Oh, and there's always new number ones.
There's
Jeez.
New number ones. Well, he did old ones. He did new ones. And, yeah, it was a really cool concept, you know, and I wish he kept it up.
I would, you know what would be an interesting idea for him, and along those lines, would be to do a review of the 52, new 52, but pair each one of those with an old equivalent number one.
Mm-hmm.
Compare this Fury of Firestorm to the original Fury of Firestorm, or the original Firestorm, for that matter.
Yeah, that would be cool.
This Blue Beetle to the original Blue Beetle. This Batgirl to some other Batgirl, you know.
Yeah.
Had I the time and energy, I would do it. Or, yeah, any of them.
That would be cool.
Because I part of it is when you start going back that far, the storytelling has just changed so much.
Mm-hmm.
Part of why I really like the Superman number one is I felt it was about the only one in the bunch for the most part. There were one or two others, but the only one that really told a complete story.
Mm-hmm.
I felt at the end of that issue, I had gotten a beginning, a middle, and end. Sure, there's more to come. It's an ongoing. I get that.
Mm-hmm.
But not a to be continued, or I felt a few too many ended almost on that Shazam moment where they just come into costume.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so... It's fun stuff all around. And I know with some of these reviews I was kind of harsh on them, but DC said they're rethinking their game. They're putting the best foot forward and all new, all exciting. I took that as I take any comic I review as an opportunity to treat the property and material with respect that they spent time and money trying to do doing their best job possible. The least I could do is take the material seriously and analyze it with some thought and intent.
Well, and that's exactly what I do when I try to do my reviews for collected editions. I mean, some of this material is very old, but yet these editions are new to a lot of people. And not only that, but, you know, you want to get the most out of your money. So, you know, that's important for my readers anyway.
Well, you know, and I look at these sales figures we talk about and Bob and I talk about every month, and it's one of those where you can tell what's selling better than other things and what's not selling so well. But what a creative team or a publisher cannot take out of these, you know, data points is any indication as to why.
Mm-hmm.
They need to be looking towards reviewers, critics, and just fans in general when they give feedback to give some actual coherent thought as to this didn't work for me because I liked this because, you know, this artist wasn't telling a story well because it was too bland, too monochromatic, unclear art, or because, wow, they did a great job with the way the story gelled with the art, or what they did with the art was unusual, it was great, you know, what have you. To me, that's the opportunity that we as podcasters, as readers, have to contribute back to the industry and provide constructive feedback. And
Well, that's what kills me about some of these Marvel Premier Classic hardcovers, is that all they do is package the old material, and there's no brand new introduction, or they have an introduction from 1998. It's like, why are you repackaging this? What makes this a classic? What makes this a premier book? You know, resell this to me.
Yes.
You know, why should I be buying this after all these years? And I think the Omnibus does a great job of that. The Walt Simonson book is fantastic. It's probably, you know, my top 10 books of the year, without a doubt. But some of these other ones they repackage, it's like, what? Why? You know,
that goes back to the game's hardcover for New Teen Titans. The forward and the afterward gave it some context, some history of why it took so long to come out, how that impacted the story, and kind of a remember this is where the characters were to a lesser degree, but also the stuff at the end of here's the script, here's where we had to make some changes. I mean, it justified itself, it sold itself, it made it that much richer of an experience. Not just, you know, we had a couple issues lying around, we're going to slap them out.
Right.
So, but that goes towards the whole concept of selling comics.
Right.
And I really think that is a lost art that really needs to come back into vogue.
Mm-hmm.
Because until it does, we're not going to see great sales across the board.
Oh, I can tell you one thing that I'm doing.
Okay.
I've got another back issue article that I'm going to be doing.
Oh, cool.
It won't be coming out till next year. But the back issue number 61 is going to be on the old Treasury editions.
Oh, nice.
And I am going to do a comprehensive checklist of every single Treasury edition that came out.
There are a couple of those I've had my eye on.
DC, Marvel, doesn't matter. Yeah. You know,
the DC one on the Fortress of Solitude is one that I've had my eye on. And was it the Bicentennial Battles for Cap? Was that Treasury
edition? That's Cap, yep.
Yeah, that's another one I've had my eye on. And those by which I mean, it's someday. They're not hideously expensive, but I'm cheap.
No. They're $30.
Yeah. So definitely, let us know when that's getting listed in previews, and we'll mention it, or you can mention it.
I know I should mention it
on the preview spotlight episode.
So
we just passed 4 years of doing those, by the way.
Did we really?
Yeah.
Cool.
So.
And I've been podcasting for 6, so long time with you.
Yeah.
So, good deal.
Cool. That pretty much do it then?
I'm good.
All right. Awesome. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. The sales estimates can be found under the sales chart section of the Comic Book Page website. Please email us at themayoreport@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening. The views expressed by Don Mayo and his guests are their own and may or may not accurately reflect reality in any way, shape, or form. If they differ from your reality, please verify you're in the same space-time continuum before taking any action. If you're a resident of some other space-time continuum, please limit any actions you may take to that alternate reality. All numbers given are estimates and only estimates. To think otherwise would be foolish. The estimates given are for sales from publishers to retailers for items invoiced through Diamond Comics Distribution for the month in question. Diamond Order Index only goes to 2 decimal places, and therefore there's a margin of error of at least 1/10,000th of the estimate for the key title, which is usually, but not always, Batman. For months in which no issue of Batman shipped, Detective Comics is usually used as the key title. For months in which no issue of Batman or Detective shipped, Batman: The Battle for the Cowl was used instead. The title used as the key title is irrelevant. If you do not understand why or do not believe this, please consider taking a refresher course on basic algebra. Math is fun, but only if you understand it. No information about how many copies may or may not have sold to readers is included, implied, or denied. Sell-through information is not currently available, and we limit our reporting to the available information. If, however, you enjoy fiction, please listen to this preview spotlight for our recommendations of upcoming comic books. Anywhere from all of the units shipped to retailers to none of them could still be sitting on store shelves gathering dust. All reorder activity should be seen only as indications that at least one retailer may have excessive amounts of empty shelf space with dust that needs collecting. The list of the top 300 comic books only contains the top 300 comic books sold to Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 300 comic books may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 300 comic books for the month in question. The list of the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions only contains the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to the retailers for the month in question. More than 300 graphic novels and collected editions may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions for the month. In the past, the list of the top graphic novels and collected editions contained only 100, 50, 25, or as few as 10 items on the list. This means that historical data about graphic novels and collected editions is increasingly limited the further back in time you look. Fixing this may require time travel, which, as far as we know, has not been invented in the past, present, or any possible or probable future. No visibility into the sales or lack of sales of any comic book, graphic novel, or collected editions that are not listed on the top 300 comic books or top 300 graphic novels and collected edition lists are included, implied, or denied. The data from Diamond only contains data from Diamond. For some strange reason, Diamond doesn't report on sales to competing distributors. No information about the sales or lack of sales of any item sold outside of Diamond's comics distribution channel is included, implied, or denied. That information is considered to be outside the scope of this report. We limit this report to the available data. If more data becomes available, we'd be happy to include it. If this isn't the data you're looking for, then this isn't the data you're looking for. No amount of whining will change that. If you don't know why this disclaimer is here, then it probably isn't meant for you. This report is inapplicable in the alternate reality of Duluth, Minnesota. Math, logic, and the English language itself seem to work very differently there. I have neither the time nor the interest in engaging in pointless debates in this hypothetical reality. There are no guarantees of accuracy, reliability, completeness, or timeliness of any of the information given in the course of this discussion. We are human, and sometimes we make mistakes. We appreciate your understanding in this area. Any statements that may contain projections or other predictions about future events should be viewed as opinions that are subject to change as new information becomes available. Actual events may unfold in unexpected ways. As Doc Brown once said, the future is what you make of it. If any statements are contradicted or contested, the participants of the discussion may disavow any knowledge of those statements.